Hi, I'm Dietrich.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Ben.
We're from the podcast That Song From That Movie, the journey through the very best and worst of movie songs.
We want you to join us on our voyage across the cinematic sound waves as we take a deep dive on a new song and movie each week to figure out just what makes them tick.
Already we've set sail with Celine Dion on the Titanic, found a friend in Toy Story, and gotten drenched out in the rain with Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Hopefully each breakdown allows us to answer the ultimate question of what's better, the movie or the song. Or at least learn something new along the way.
Just like learning that Toy Story 4 is a meaningless cash grab without a soul.
You can subscribe right now on all good podcast platforms. If you use one of the bad ones, then that's on you, and we can't be held responsible.
Subscribe to That Song From That Movie.
What is up, weirdos? You're listening to the Manic Pixie Weirdo. I'm Abigail, your host, and this is the podcast where we talk about all the different kinds of relationships that we have in our lives. And this week we're talking about my relationship with trauma and forgiveness. Now, I've had a lot of trauma in my life. Just a whole lot. Stuff that I didn't realize was trauma. Not until much later. And then dealing with the trauma has been, you know, a roller coaster. And it can be for a lot of people. Because it comes out in lots and lots and lots of different ways. For me, the effect that the trauma, not the, because that sounds like it's just one singular event. It's not. There are a lot of different things that encompass my trauma, and that sort of fall under that category. But, you know, one of the ways that it sort of came out it's very self-loathing. I struggle a lot with that, with self-loathing, self-hatred, and then trying to overcompensate for that, because, you know, I tell myself really, really horrible things like it was my fault. I did this. I put myself into a situation where this could have happened. I made myself vulnerable in this way. And then it, almost like I deserve what I got kind of a thing. Like I should have known better. To a certain extent, I feel like there are a couple of instances when that was true where I should have known better. But I mean, when you really, like, when it really comes down to it, I didn't know better. I thought that I did. I thought that I had, you know, like, more self-awareness. It's not even self-aware. It's more just awareness of my surroundings. And I tend to have so it's twofold, because I have massive, massive trust issues, which is a result of the trauma that I have. But I also try really hard consciously not to bring those trust issues to a new relationship. Or and whether that is like a not necessarily a romantic relationship, but even to like a friendship, or an acquaintance, you know, I try really hard consciously not to let those issues, those trust issues that are centered around trauma that does not affect the person that's in front of me, like right now. I try really hard not to allow it to affect that. But, and so in doing so, I found throughout my life that while having trust issues, I also trust very easily and trust people who I shouldn't necessarily trust. And I don't really know what that's about. Because I think that it comes from that's not true. I think it comes from a place of I'm trying very consciously, like I said, to not let those issues that I had with people in the past affect And those experiences affect what's happening right now, because in my mind, it seems very like, you know, this person hasn't done anything to me yet. For all I know, they could be a trustworthy person, and they could be someone who I can ultimately end up trusting and having a friendship with. And so I get, and so if I think I look at it more of like, okay, so it would be unfair for me to not trust them because I have trust issues, then I kind of perceived it as like, that's not really their problem. Like they didn't do it. They haven't done anything to hurt me. They haven't, there's no evidence to support that they have done anything to wrong me. So why would I sort of place those trust issues on someone who I don't really know? And then I, you know, and then as we go down the line, it sort of falls into, you know, a catch 22 of like, well, I trusted you and now we're in this like really bad place. And I don't really know how we got here other than, and see, then that it circles back to the self-doubt and the self-hatred and that self-loathing of, well, I made a mistake and I thought I could trust you. And so by trusting you and then your actions by doing things that have hurt me, I got myself into this situation and I should have known better. And then it manifests itself in all these kinds of different ways. And it became a pattern I really noticed in my life. It became a pattern that I would do that. And then, like I said, I would end up in a place where I'm just in a lot of pain. I'm in a lot of pain. I'm suffering a lot. I'm very confused. I don't know really how I ended up here because I was trying to be self-aware and give you the benefit of the doubt and trying very hard to sort of put those other issues aside and not bring them into, you know, the friendship or the acquaintanceship or even to a certain extent the romantic relationship that I was involved in at the time. And it was very confusing for a very long time. And eventually it got very, very overwhelming. And I realized that what I thought I was doing was giving people the benefit of the doubt and not bringing all of that trauma baggage with me and putting it on somebody else. But by doing that, and because I hadn't really like addressed it, that's just, yeah, like that's what it is I hadn't addressed it. I hadn't really like, you know, sort of examined and looked at like those trauma. I just never dealt with it. It was very much like, I'm going to just stuff this. And it's, you know, and it's going to seep out in very unhealthy ways. And I will deal with that when it becomes like a problem kind of a thing. And then when it became a problem, I would do the same thing with, you know, the self-destruction as I would with the emotions and everything else. And it would be very, well, I guess we're just going to sweep it under the rug. And we just will not, like examine it. Because for me, I was always very interested in like the spirituality aspect of it. And even the science. I love physics. Physics is like, it was like my first love. Well, to a degree. To a degree. That's not entirely true. That's not entirely... That's probably not even true. That's probably not true. Because when I was introduced to physics, I had a really bad attitude. I did. I had a very bad attitude. Very, like, ugh. I was a senior in high school, and I was just like, get this. Like, I just need this class. Like, just what do I have to do? Just let me get through this. I want to grad. Like, I want out. I want out. So that's not really true. It wasn't until, like, after I sort of was given room to, like, explore and, like, really learn physics, like, in a way that I like. And understood that I fell in love with it. But I've always been like interested in how those two join together. But it was very compartmentalized. So I became like a master of compartmentalization, where I could compartmentalize the trauma that occurred. And then I could compartmentalize. So I could compartmentalize the event, like the traumatic event that occurred. And it was like, so like how the best way that I could like visually describe it is like, so on a timeline, like the timeline begins, you know, when I was born. And then, you know, and it's continually going because I'm not dead yet. But you get the idea. And so I became very good at being able to once I figured out like what emotions were, and like the beginning stages of like how to regulate those. I'm still not perfect at it. I don't think I will ever be perfect at regulating my emotions. The best way that, so like if I had to describe it, the best way I've heard it described was actually by Kristen Bell. She was in an interview and she basically said, you know, so if there's a scale of like emotions, like from 1 to 10, if I'm between a 4 and a 7, then I'm good. But anything, then like I'm pretty okay. But anything above or below a 4 or a 7 on that scale, I'm crying. Yes, I know what that is. I saw that interview and I was like, yes, that's me. That's it. That's me. That's how I am. But once I've kind of figured out like emotions, and like I said, I'm not perfect. There's no way I don't know if that's ever going to happen. If I'm ever going to be like perfect at emotional regulation. Yeah, because if I'm not between a 4 and a 7, I'm crying. I'm crying. That's just how it is. And so once I kind of figured out that, then I was able to sort of understand like broader concepts, like, you know, these ideas of like, okay, so trauma, what is that? And what I ended up doing was like, so on this timeline, what I would end up doing is like something would happen that was traumatic, and I would isolate it to that specific moment in the timeline, and then I would kind of like force myself to build a bridge and get over it. And to a certain extent, what I ended up doing, and I didn't realize that I had done this, until, you know, I was older and in therapy, was that not only did I build a bridge and get over it, but then I burned the bridge down and never wanted to look at it again and never wanted to examine it again. And it wasn't until I realized that I got very good at compartmentalization. So I would compartmentalize the traumatic event, whatever it was, on the timeline. And then I'd build my bridge, get over it, then burn the bridge to the ground. And then I just keep going, and I would never really address it. I would just kind of be like, no, it's like, it's already happened. Like, there's nothing anybody can do about this thing that happened. And like, I don't, there's no, it's not a thing. anymore. Like, it's, I'm making it so it's not a thing anymore, because it's just, it's here, like on the timeline. It's just here. It, you know, it happened when I was seven. It was a thing that happened when I was seven, you know, blah, 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 all the stuff. And I would just keep going and doing that. But not only would I have like boxes on the timeline of like isolated events that happened, but then I would remove the emotion from it. I would just look at it solely as like, this is what happened. This is how I remember it happening. And that's it. There's no emotion tied to it. There's no there's no feeling at all. Just sort of not even numb. Like, numb is a feeling. Not even numb. What it was like, void. It was just very like, this is just, these are just the facts. This was my perception of what happened. This is how it was. And it would be like, so if somebody were to ask me to like recount like a traumatic event that happened, it would be very, you know, I would almost, it wouldn't be monotone. It would, but it would be almost, it would be very like, so this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened, and yeah, that's how it went. That's what happened. And like, that's about as much emotion that I was like really, really willing to give to it. Because what I would do is I would like suck all of the emotion out of the event, out of the traumatic event that happened, and then that gets isolated in its own like box on the timeline. And they would be like two totally separate things. They're not related. This is just, you know, this is the event, this happened, and then this is how, and then this is the emotional, these are the emotions that I was feeling at the time. And eventually what happened was I compartment, so like if you look at it like on a timeline, it was like all of a sudden, like you couldn't even see the line anymore. It was just boxes and boxes and boxes and boxes and boxes, and they were all kind of like scattered all over the place, and there's nothing, there was no timeline to see because there was no timeline left. It was just isolated events with no emotion attached to them at all, because the emotion was in a different place. And then it would come out. And that's sort of the problem with like sweeping it under the rug, is that, you know, you sweep it under the rug. And eventually, the pile gets too big for the rug to cover it. And so what I ended up doing was I just buy a bigger rug. I was like, okay, fine. I'd be like, I don't see a problem. I just need a bigger rug to hide the stuff. Like, that's, what are you, this is not a problem. It's just, I just need a bigger rug. It's fine. Unfortunately, there aren't enough rugs or carpet in the world to cover up the pile. Like, that's how big it got. And as I got older, specifically when I was 20, 21, in that area. Well, not really 2021, really like 18, 19. And maybe you could give it a little bit into the 20, but not really. Kind of, but not really. What ended up happening was I lucked out. And after many years, I found a therapist that I clicked with really well. And one of the reasons that we clicked so well was because she refused to let me, like, not feel. She refused to let me buy a bigger rug. She refused to let me, like, you know, try and just keep going. And what I noticed is that not only was it seeping out of me in ways that were not healthy. But it affected, it started to, so like when I began to like go back and like talk about stuff, she would have me tell her what happened. And, you know, at first I would just be like, so this thing happened and then this other thing happened and then this thing happened and then this thing happened and like then now we're here. And then she would pick something out of that and she'd be like, okay, tell me about that. And I would be like, okay. And I basically ended up telling the story of like, I ended up having to like tell the story of one specific like traumatic event that like whatever it was that we were talking about. And I would tell it over and over and over and over again. And what ended up happening was as I told it over and over again, I was less able to keep the emotion out of my voice. And I was less able to regulate that. And I had to feel it. And then there were times when I wouldn't even be talking about it. I would be talking about something totally different. And she would be like, okay, you're getting very, very upset. Why are you so upset? And then of course I would be even more upset because I'd be like, I don't understand what you mean. What do you mean? Why am I upset? Like, I've just told you what happened. And you know, this was something that was like happening like currently, like in my life. And I'd be like, I don't understand. What do you mean? Like, what do you mean? Why am I upset? And she would be like, okay, well, you got on the subway and your ticket didn't work. And then you were trying to figure out why your ticket didn't work, only to find out that like you needed more money on the ticket. So then when you went over to put more money on the ticket, it wouldn't take your dollar bill. And now you're here. You got on the subway. Obviously, you were able to figure it out, but why are you crying? Because it took you 5 minutes to put money on your ticket so that you could get on the subway so that you could come here. Like, that is, and basically what she was saying was, you know, and that's not necessarily like what happened, but that, or like, you know, but it's just an example of like something that, like something that small, like something that, you know, is very, very, very small in the grand scheme of things. It's a little alligator. It's not, you know, it's not like, my whole day doesn't have to be ruined and I don't have to have like a massive panic attack, you know, while I'm trying to put money on my Metro card just so I can get on the L so that I can get to my therapy appointment. Like, this is very, 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 these are very small things. And so it's like the emotion. And so basically what I ended up learning was that like my emotional response was not adequate. Like, it was not that it wasn't adequate, that's not the right word, but that my emotional response sort of wasn't proportional to what was happening. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if that makes sense, but that's sort of how like I ended up having to, because it would come out in all of these little things. And I, for, you know, a very long time, I was just like, this is just me. This is just how I am. Like, I don't know how to regulate any of this stuff. This just happens. Like, it just happens all the time. And then I can't get out of bed. You know, it's not necessarily like, sometimes I have all this energy and sometimes I'm just like, I can't, like something little, like, you know, I have to put money on my Metro ticket. It, you know, I ended up having a panic attack in the, you know, at the blue line, trying to get on the L, you know, to go somewhere, and I ended up having a panic attack because there's, I can't figure it out, and, you know, it's very disproportionate, but it started coming out in ways like that, and I didn't understand that those were ways, those were signs of, like, this trauma that I had never really acknowledged or dealt with, coming out, because I would just always kind of chalk it up to, like, this is just me. I'm just a crazy person. Like, this is why everybody thinks I'm crazy. Like, of course, like, you know, and I get it. It makes sense because I am. And then, but it took her to be like, okay, no, you're not. No. Like, no. And it took somebody explaining that and then allowing me to feel that, that stuff, and then explaining to me, you know, like, no, it's a panic attack. You're having a panic attack. Like, you're not crazy. You're having a panic attack because there are all of these other things that, you haven't addressed. And if we address them, then, you know, we might then have a fighting chance of, you know, dealing with the anxiety and the depression and the manic behavior and those kinds of things that come out, and it can seep out in a lot of ways. It took a lot. And I mean, I'm still not, you know, that was 18, 19, like I said, 20, I'm 28 now. That was like 10 years ago. And I'm still like learning about all of this stuff because there's still stuff that I just can't, is like really painful to talk about. And it is, it's very painful. What I learned, though, is that it's a lot more painful to not deal with it and to sort of sweep it under the rug than it is to do it. Because I'm gonna have to do it anyway. Like, it's gonna have to happen. At some point, there will have to be a reckoning. Like, I will have to deal with all of these things. And like I said, I've been in therapy for a really long time. And you know, I found a very good therapist, who I love very much. And it has helped me a lot. And it took a lot of time for me to get to that place to where I found somebody that I liked, that we clicked and that I trusted, and who I really felt like was on my side. And somebody who I really felt like was like, okay, like, this is about you. Like, you're paying for this time for you. You're not paying for this time for somebody else. We're paying for this time for you. And that was really, that's a long journey. I don't see that therapist anymore today because we don't live in the same state. and it's very hard. I find it very difficult to do like Zoom or phone call therapy. It's just not the same. Like, I like to be like, have that physical presence, especially when I'm dealing with my trauma, because if I'm there with somebody physically, I feel like I'm being held more accountable, than if I'm like over a Zoom. Because I don't know, like, the thing for me is like, if I can just hang up at any point, then that's not really doing me any good, because it's facilitating, it's sort of like enabling my ability to be very dismissive at times and be very dismissive and be very like, well, I don't really want to deal with this right now, so I'm a run. Like, bye! I'm out. Because I could just hang up at any point. Like, I could just be like, I'm out. Oh no, we lost connection. Whatever will we do? You know, like that kind of thing. And so I can't necessarily, even now, like, trust myself to not be like, yeah, I'm out. I'm done. You know, I don't know if that makes sense, but if I'm there with a physical person like sitting across from me, it's a lot. I can't do that. I can't just be like, out, goodbye, and then just like continue on with my day. Like it removes those excuses, and it removes those sort of crutches for me. So but I don't know. So, yeah, trauma is very tricky. And that's something that they, like, won't tell you. I don't know if this is a secret or if this is just something that I haven't really heard talked about a lot. I don't know if it's entirely possible that it gets talked about a lot, but I just personally, like, have not had an experience where it gets talked about a lot. There's no expiration date on trauma. You guys, there's not, it's not a thing. There's no expiration date. It will come out in very weird ways, kind of whenever. And, you know, I don't really get a say in when it comes out. I mean, I've had panic attacks very recently where I just am like, I don't know what's happening. Only to find out, you know, that, you know, this is a traumatic event that happened to me when I was a child, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. And see, that's the other thing is like, I thought I dealt with it and it's coming up. You know, it comes up and it's like, I thought I dealt with this. I thought I was done with this. Like, Jesus, I just want it to be over with. Like, God, I've talked every way I know how about this. I've read all the books. I've written about it in my, I don't do that, but, you know, just like all the things. And it's still here? Like, Jesus. And I get sick of myself sometimes because I'm like, God, shouldn't I be, like, this was something that happened to me when I was 7. Shouldn't I be over this already? Like, God, what is it gonna take? No. I have to be very, I kind of have to be aware of that. Because I get into that, you know, very self-deprecating, very self, like, self-loathing, very much like, Jesus, Abigail, what is wrong with you? Like, this is something that happened to you when you were 6. You should be over this by now. You are 28. Like, move the fuck on, kind of a thing. And I get very mean to myself. It sounds very ridiculous when I say it out loud, but it's what happens. And I don't think that's something that's unique to me. There's no way that's unique to me. But I do, I get like sick of myself and like myself dealing with this trauma because I'm like, God, it's been forever. Like, it feels like it's been forever. Why am I still holding on to this? And yeah, it's because there's no expiration date. It doesn't, there are some things that it will just never go away. You learn to live with it, and it's a little bit less painful every time you revisit it, and it's a little less painful every time. And it just gets a little bit less painful every single time that I revisit it. And I go in and out of that acceptance. You know, and that's nothing new, you know, the five stages of grief, and you're allowed to, it's a fluid thing. You go in and out of the five stages of grief, and there's no like real order to them. It just kind of happens. And, and that's just sort of how that works. And I have to, you know, I very much have to like catch myself. I have to be like, whoa, back it up. Like, we need to pump the brakes, and then we need to, you know, turn on our hazard lights, pull the fuck over, and just take a minute. Just like sit here for a second, because nothing about what I just said to myself was okay. Because I do that a lot. Like, you know, they say don't shoulda, woulda, coulda all over yourself. I do that a lot. And I have to like calm down and like give myself room to just be like, okay, so we're just going to feel this. And sometimes you just have to write it out. And that's where oh my goodness. I don't know if I will ever get to a place where this will ever be something that I'm good at. But being compassionate with myself. I don't know if I will ever get to a place where I can like definitively say, I am a very compassionate person, including to myself. Probably not. That's probably nope, untrue. Like, I don't know. And I don't know if I'll ever get there. I want to, I hope so. But I don't know, because I'm very, very hard on myself. And I have to learn. I had to learn how to be compassionate with myself. And this is where the forgiveness comes in, because for me, especially when I was younger, you know, you say, okay, so like I did something wrong. Like, okay, let's just some random example. Like, I took your pen and I didn't give it back. And then you say, okay, so now I have to give it back. And then you say you're sorry. You know, like, that's how we talk to children. That's how we talk to little kids. And then, you know, then we say, okay, so you have to give the pen back. And then you have to say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to take your pen. I meant to give it back to you. Here it is. I'm very sorry. Please forgive me. And, you know, when you're a kid, it seems very easy. Like, you just kind of say the words and then it's like magic, you know, like you say the words and then hopefully the other person like forget, like takes pity on you and, you know, forgives you, and then you go about and it's like all over. Yet that's not how forgiveness works, at least not for me. Because the hardest person that I found to forgive is myself. I've never really had an issue trying, like, forgiving other people. That's never really been something that I've struggled with, is forgiving other people. It's forgiving myself that I always have the issue with. And my mom at one point told me one time, you know, forgiveness is not, when you apologize and when you ask for forgiveness, it's almost very selfish, because forgiveness is not for the other person. Forgiveness is for yourself. Because you're really asking yourself to forgive yourself. That's what you do. It's just the physical act of going to another person and being able to be vulnerable and admit, you know, that you were wrong or that you wronged them. And you understand why they are upset. And, you know, giving that, it's very cleansing. It can be, at least for me, it can be very like cleansing and very, relieving, because I've, you know, like I said, I've never really had problem forgiving other people. That's never really been an issue. It's, and I think that goes back to the fact that, like, I am my own worst nightmare. And because I am my own worst nightmare and my own, like, destruction, basically, it's been a lot harder for me to forgive myself than it has ever been for me to forgive other people. And when my mom said that to me, that forgiveness is not for the other person, forgiveness is for yourself, that really, that really took me by surprise, because I never thought of it that way. And I think that the reason that I never thought of it that way is because, like I said, I haven't had problem, like, I've never really struggled with forgiving somebody else. Like, any time somebody comes to me and says, you know, like, I'm really sorry, will you forgive me? Those kind, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, my immediate, yes, of course. Absolutely. It's never been hard for me to do that. It is hard for me to forgive what I did and my misgivings and my misjudgments and my wrongs. It's very, and it's not, it doesn't really, and see, and the other thing is too, is like, it's never really, it's always been hollow for me when I hear somebody say, I forgive you. Well, it's not always. It hasn't always been hollow. Most of the time it's hollow, though. It's very hollow. It's very just like, yeah, that's just kind of like what you say. I hope it's true. That kind of thing. Like, that's kind of, I've never said those words, like, out loud to another person. Not that I can recall. However, it's entirely possible that I have, said the things before to somebody's face. I don't know. But I don't think that I have. To my knowledge, I haven't ever said that to somebody. But I think that a part of the reason why it was always very, it felt very hollow to me when people would say, oh yeah, no, like, I forgive you. Is because I was still judging myself, and I was still very much, like, horrified with myself and with what I had done, kind of a thing. And so it's always been much harder for me to forgive myself. And I don't know if I'll ever get to a place where I will fully be able to forgive myself for certain things, because, like I said, you know, it's a, I am very, see, and here's the arrogance coming out, which is a weird thing. It's a very weird thing to have. I'll just tell you this. It's very weird to be very arrogant about self-hate. It's very strange that, like, I choose to be very arrogant about the fact that I am very good at self-hate. Yeah. I'm going to have to explore that a little bit more. But I've noticed that recently. It's like a recent discovery of mine that I've had, that I'm, I feel very, like, I'm very arrogant about the dumbest stuff. Like, about, it's so, like, why would you be arrogant about self-hate? I am. I'm very arrogant because I'm very good at it. I'm very, very, oh my God. I'm so good at it. I'm so good. I am the best at self-hatred. Absolute the best. Like, self-loathing, self-hatred, self-deprecation. I've got that shit on lock, you guys. Like, I'm so good at it. How weird is it to be that arrogant about self-deprecation? Like, that's weird. That's very weird. It's fine. I'm a weirdo. I mean, it's not fine. It's definitely not fine. It's something that I just have, like, recently discovered about myself. And I don't really know how I feel about it yet, but we'll get there. I'll keep you guys updated if you want to know. But that's always been the hardest part. Forgiving myself has always been the hardest part is because I am so self-deprecating and so loathful of who I am. Well, it's not necessarily loathful of who I am. It's loathful at whatever it was that I had done. Or what it was that I had perceived that I had done wrong in a situation. Because there have been, you know, especially when talking about trauma, I had to learn that my perception of what happened wasn't necessarily accurate or true. And just because I perceived something happening, I ended up in a very traumatic experience. And so I would always circle back to, you know, I did this. I put myself into this situation. I got here. I don't really know how I got here. I'm very confused at how I got here, but I'm here and this is what happened. And now I feel stuck, you know? Or what could I have done differently so that maybe the outcome wasn't... See, and then I go, and then I do that weird bargaining thing where I'm like, so maybe it wouldn't have been so traumatic. Not that it wouldn't have been traumatic at all, but like maybe it wouldn't have been so traumatic. Like, it's just weird. And so I get into this cycle, and that's why it's very difficult for me. See, and it's never really been hard for me to admit when I'm wrong. It's more difficult for me to admit that I just didn't know. Because I go, you know, that I just didn't know. I just truly did not know. I did, like, that's always been very difficult for me to do, is to be like, I don't know and I don't understand. That's always been a very difficult thing for me, to admit to myself, and that it was okay that I didn't know or didn't understand it. I mean, it's always been like those are the two things for me that it's very difficult and to forgive. It's very difficult for me to not only admit that I just didn't know or I just truly didn't understand. And then the next step with that is it's very difficult for me to forgive that that lack of knowing, that lack of knowledge, or that lack of understanding. It's very, very difficult for me to do that internally. Forgiveness is very hard for me. When I'm talking specifically about forgiving myself, it's very difficult because I don't give myself a lot of room. I don't give myself a lot of wiggle room to, excuses. I do not give myself a lot of room for excuses. I generally pass off reasons as an excuse, especially when it's not with other people, with myself. It's specifically with myself. I'm like, stop coming up with excuses. Just do it. It's very difficult for me to get out of that and to forgive just a lack of understanding or just a lack of knowing. Because I don't, for whatever reason, I want to think that I know that I don't know everything, and I know that there's no way that I will ever know everything. For me, though, it's very difficult to forgive the lack of knowledge or the lack of understanding for myself when something happens and I'm like, I don't know the answer to that. I don't have an answer because I don't know. It's very, very difficult for me to forgive that because I feel like I'm an idiot and I should know. And so it's hard for me to forgive that. It's hard for me to forgive that for myself. And forgiveness is hard. I mean, and like I said, and forgiveness is like trauma in the sense that there's no expiration date. Just because I forgive myself for something today doesn't mean that in 5 years I'm going to forgive myself. Like, I'll still have forgiven myself. Like, there have been things where I've, you know, like, there's been stuff that I have, you know, thought, much like with the trauma, that I had forgiven myself for, that I, for whatever reason, didn't. And it came up years later, you know? And so it's very, it's very fluid and it can be difficult. And that's why it's very, you know, it's a tricky thing. It's a tricky thing. And it's probably one of the hardest things, that I have had to learn to do is to be gentle with myself and to forgive myself for simply not knowing or understanding. It's a very hard lesson. And I'm still working on it. And I may never get to a perfect place, which is fine. It's fine. I'm a work in progress. You guys know that. I hope I'm a work in progress. I'm trying. And see, then there's that little voice in my head that's like, don't try, do it. And it's like, see, and that, like, that was the immediate instant like reaction that I had when I said, I try. And that voice in the back of my head was like, don't try, do it. Like, shut up and just do it. Like, that's, you know what I'm saying? I don't know if that makes sense, but yeah. I mean, you got to try. You have to start somewhere, kind of a thing. And it's hard. It is hard. It can be very hard. It's okay if it's hard for you, because it's hard for me too. So stick around, join us. We can all help forgive each other, and then in turn, maybe we can be a little bit kinder and gentler to ourselves and learn how to forgive ourselves. I don't know. Maybe. Hopefully. So yeah, so that's kind of all I have for trauma and forgiveness. If you have an experience with trauma or forgiveness, or you have a different experience or a similar experience, or you want to share an experience with me or anything like that, email me at manicpixieweird@protonmail.com. I would love to read all of your stories, all of your emails. If you want me to shout you out in a What's Up Weirdo Wednesday shout out, put that in the description box, not the description box, the name of the email, just so that I know. But yeah, so email me all of the stuff, topic recommendations, anything that you guys want to hear about, any of it. mandapixieweird@protonmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at MP Weirdo Podcast. And then the Instagram is the_main_weirdo1. And then the Pinterest is the_main_weirdo21. So check it out. Let me know what you guys think. I hope you guys liked it. And as always, be kind and stay weird, guys. Love y'all. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Hey, do you have a podcast, or maybe you're just thinking about starting a podcast? Well, I am Chris from Podtastic Audio, and here I show you tips and tricks on how to make your audio sound the best it possibly can with the gear you already have. With 2 years of experience on the Chris and Christine Show creating the finest audio I possibly can make, I will show you the tips and tricks I have used on that show to make the audio sound fantastic. So if you have any podcast-related questions to your audio, you always can email me at podtasticaudio@gmail.com like this guy here did. His name is Joe. Joe writes in from the cast. Hey, Chris, when we all sit down together to record our episode, our audio is too low and it has a lot of echo in the recording. How do we make our show sound better? Well, Joe, is the microphone you're using rhyme with the name Betty? And is that microphone in the same room with you? I'd start with that stuff first. And for more Podtastic Audio information, you can go to anchor.fm/podtasticaudio, and you keep on making your amazing podcast.